The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 135 for Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out and talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening is Mr. Lou Page of Zombies Ate My Podcast and the upcoming Off the Cuff, soon to make a splash appearance on iTunes. What's going on, man?
Not much. Surviving, so lots of movies.
You and me both. There's been a lot of indoor time this week and last week. So I actually have I don't have a lot to talk about, but I've been able to dive into some things that I previously did not have time for, just because, like, you know, I like to run, I like to go and do things, and when winter is happening, you tend to be inside a little bit more. So Netflix has been my best friend.
Oh, there's plenty of streaming services.
This is where I get jealous of you Americans. Because we have Netflix. And that's it. I can purchase and stream iTunes movies, and that's fine. And I do that. It's funny, you know, like, I want to say 6 or 8 years ago, it's about the right math, I think, when you could first purchase a iTunes movie and watch it, like you rent it, purchase, but rent it for $6. I thought, why would I do that? You know, because at the time, you know, torrenting was the big thing. You could download stuff pretty quick. You know, I just had high speed internet, but I have found now, and this could be the fact that I'm also now a independent creator and have a lot of respect for just like the cost of things, but $6 for me is worth it to not have to worry about what version I'm getting, how long it's going to be. If I didn't think ahead of time and download a movie before I put the pizza in the oven on a Friday night, it's a lot easier to just pay the $6 and watch it.
It is. I find myself renting more than I used to.
I don't buy anything.
I had at one point 600 films on DVD, and I realized that I was maybe watching a handful of them every year, and they were just sitting there. And then I moved into a smaller apartment and went, I really don't have a place for these anymore. It's time to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And Netflix became my best friend.
Yeah. The thing for me is the Blu-ray and the audio. Streaming video, 1080p, I have 80 down and 8 up here as far as my internet connection is concerned, so I don't run into any issues when streaming a 1080p video. They look pretty good. Actually, Netflix, as a matter of fact, when they do their high-def stuff, it looks pretty sharp. The sound comes in well, it's surround sound as far as I can tell. I don't have a magical system, but I have a pretty good JBL set and an amp from 10 years ago, and it does 5.1 Dolby Digital. I do not really feel that the streaming audio is quite up to snuff. I feel I get a much more robust experience off of a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
There's only so much you can do with streaming. Yeah,
and there was I can't remember which podcast it was. It might have actually been Hammond's Beyond the Playlist that I was listening to someone talk about how audio is still a thing. No, you know what? That's a lie. It was Daily Tech News Show. One of Tom's guests was talking about how he loves streaming, but he's an audiophile. And as much as 1080p or eventually 4K streaming is the bee's knees, you know, the audio is just too much and it doesn't come through as clearly as it does when you've got it direct
up. I think that may have been when he had Patrick Norton on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it might have been. I feel like it. I know. I recognize that Patrick.
I know he's been on the show, and I know he's an audiophile.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember who it was. There was a special. There was like a 16-minute segment that they had not off air. It was like a post show.
Yeah,
it was Jenny and Tom, and I'm blanking on the name. And this wasn't part of the show notes today, so I don't have the information in front of me. Oh man! But speaking of streaming and stuff like that, like what are you using right now? Like obviously Netflix, but what other stuff in the U.S. do you use that I'm going to be extremely jealous of?
Okay, so I have Netflix, obviously. Though I will admit, I kind of like you guys up in Canada get a lot of stuff that I'm like, oh, that hasn't come here yet. Like
really?
you guys get some movies that are like brand new, that like we don't get for like 6 months to a year after release, and I'll hear like, oh yeah, that came out like 6 weeks ago and it's on Netflix in Canada, and I'm like, oh, great, I gotta wait for that.
I wonder what's on Netflix in Canada has you jealous, because my years with Netflix has been the opposite experience.
You guys have had a bunch of the Marvel movie stuff.
That's been up there for a while, although Captain America is gone. I was disappointed.
The only thing we had until about a couple weeks ago was The Avengers, and I think that just got pulled. And that was the only Marvel movie available on Netflix for like the last 6 months to a year.
Yeah, we did not have any Marvel stuff, like any Avengers. We've never had The Avengers.
But that's all we've had. We haven't had any of the other stuff. So I also have, I'm a Amazon Prime member, so I get Prime streaming, which is okay. I usually use it. There's two or three shows that they get that nobody else gets, and I can usually watch it on there. But I don't use that quite as often as I do Netflix. We also have Hulu, which I know you guys don't have in Canada, which is a give and take. I think it's a little too expensive for what it is.
But Hulu, that you can watch like current television series like two days after?
It's the day after.
Oh, really? Wow.
It literally like at like 8 a.m. the next morning, all the new shows go up.
Man, I don't know anybody. I hardly know anybody now that can watch a show when it's on TV.
Yeah. No, I don't watch anything live because I'm a digital cord cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And Hulu, the big gripe is I pay about $8 a month for it, but you get commercials. And they force feed the commercials. Like you might get the same commercial like six times and it'll be like, nope, you're going to sit through this commercial again. And it's like, it's almost worse than TV sometimes.
Yeah. I decided to look up Marvel on Netflix while we were chatting here, and Netflix is getting their comics confused. Titles related to Marvel, Planet Hulk, Hulk versus Thor and Wolverine. And then Justice League Doom, Justice League Apocalypse, Justice League. It's like, oh, those are DC guys. Justice League Unlimited.
You've got a bunch of DC stuff we don't have.
Almost yeah, we got a bunch of DC stuff, told. Yeah. X-Men First Class is there. The Wolverine, the one where he goes to Japan, is in there. The Amazing Spider-Man. That's old. It's not the second one.
When none of that stuff is here.
Yeah. Hellboy, Sherlock, and Star Trek. Those are not Marvel either. I think they just kind of flagged like, comic book stuff. Yep. Well, I mean, like Clone Wars is here, which I guess Disney owns Marvel and LucasArts.
It's probably populating. People who have searched for this have also
have been watching stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there was another movie that was in the releases lately. Oh, you know what it was? It was the Grand Budapest Hotel.
You got that up there?
Yeah, I remember watching that on Netflix.
That's amazing. I had to go out and rent that.
Yeah, it was with Peyton and Lee. We watched it a month ago, and that was at the same time it was on iTunes for rental, and it was on Netflix.
See, we don't get anything like that. Netflix here does not get anything until it's at least a year old.
Hmm.
I'm hoping that maybe Iron Man 3 will show up soon. Because that's the only Marvel movie I haven't seen.
It's okay.
I that's why I haven't seen it yet.
I feel
everybody
like,
goes, it's okay.
I feel like I'll have to rewatch Iron Man 3 before the second Avengers comes out. I got a funny feeling it's going to be worth knowing a bunch of the little nuances about Iron Man 3 and how they might tie into Age of Ultron. Just a hunch. I have no inside information. I'm just kind of going off trailers and from what I remember of it.
But, I'm kind of agreeing with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all the streaming services and stuff that are around. But, I mean, what have you been watching since the last time you've been on the show?
Well, I've been watching a lot of movies, and I actually went to the movies. So
nice.
Let's start with what I rented. I rented a pile of movies, and I felt really dumb renting them because I rented John Wick, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute. I rented The Equalizer, and I rented Walk Among the Tombstones. Now, I don't know if you know anything about these movies, but they are all almost exactly the same movie.
So I went and I watched the trailer for John Wick before, like when I noticed that he'd put it in the show notes the other day. That actually looks like a pretty good movie. I'm not a huge Keanu Reeves fan.
You know what? You don't need to be.
But he actually looked like he did a pretty good job.
He has like maybe 20 lines the whole movie.
That's awesome.
it to the point where I saw a critic describe it as it is a reverse horror movie.
Reverse? How? Okay. Explain myself, sir.
Okay. In horror movies, like, say, a slasher film, you're always afraid of the bad guy.
Right.
Instead, it's the bad guy is all the bad guys are afraid of the hero. And so the whole movie is, he is Jason from Friday the 13th, and everybody runs from him. That's pretty much the movie. And anytime someone tries to stop him, they die horribly.
Okay, so I guess that did not seem like a spoiler from the trailer, but we should probably give a heads up if you're planning on watching this movie. Lou might tread on.
I will try not to spoil too much of it, but it is, the basic premise is Keanu Reeves, they don't tell you anything in the beginning. His wife dies, and a day or two later, after her funeral, a package arrives, and it is a puppy. And there's a nice letter from her to him saying, this is my last gift to you. You know, you're going to be dealing with a lot of emotions. I thought that this might be a good stepping stone to help you move on with my death. She died from some kind of illness.
Mm-hmm.
And he drives like a classic 60s Mustang. And him and the dog go to this like jet park where like, they launch jets,
mm-hmm.
and he just tears ass up and down the runway with him and the dog. And on the way home, he stops to fuel. And this is all in the trailer. This is not spoilers.
Yeah, I'm remembering this from the trailer now, yeah.
And a kid comes over to him and says, nice car, how much? And he goes, it's not for sale. And he says, it's not for sale yet. And he just goes, no, it's not for sale. And he walks away and drives away. And the kid is Greyjoy from Game of Thrones.
Theon, yeah.
It's Theon Greyjoy. And that's all you see every time he's on camera, and all you see is Theon.
Yeah. Well, he's got the same facial hair, too.
He's got the same facial hair, and they don't really change his outfit all that much. So... that kid and his friends show up at John's house, and they beat him, steal the car, and they kill the dog.
Oh, God.
And they take the car to a chop shop with John Leguizamo is the guy that runs the chop shop. And as soon as he sees the car, he says to the kid, so... where did you get the car? And he goes, some like scruffy dude, we stole it. And he's like, no. What did you do to him? And he goes, oh, we beat him up, killed his dog. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't take this car. And the guy's like, what do you mean you can't take this car? He's like, no, I can't take this car. The guy's like, I don't understand. The kid's like, I don't understand. you do business with my father, because his father is like a mob boss.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you do all this business with my father. Why can't you take a car? And he goes, because that car belonged to John Wick. And he goes, who is John Wick? And he's like, the guy that's going to kill you. And he's like, what do you mean? We beat him up. He should be in a hospital. They're like, did you kill him? And he goes, no. He goes, then you're going to die. And the rest of the movie is this guy's mob boss father trying to protect him, right?
Yeah.
And John Wick just, he goes into the basement, pulls out a sledgehammer, he bashes a hole in the floor, pulls out a suitcase. The suitcase is full of guns and gold coins. And what the kid didn't know is that his father used to pay John Wick to kill people. And he was a hitman.
Right.
And he was the best at what he does. And so he just pissed off the worst hitman in the world.
Right. They're not reinventing the wheel here.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
But they're not reinventing the wheel. But what they do is, in most movies, you know, the hero is always at a disadvantage. And it's always the hero's struggle. This movie is literally like John Wick will call somebody and they pick up the phone. Like the bad guy, the mob boss calls him to apologize. And it's like, please don't kill my son. And John's like, click. And you're like, who does that? No hero does that. The hero usually talks it out. Nope. He hangs up the phone in the guy's face.
Nice.
And you're like, and anytime Keanu Reeves has a dialogue, it's like, move along. Like, there's innocent people, and he's like, you need to leave. And then he proceeds to kill everybody else in the room. And you're like, what? This doesn't happen in movies.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember another movie, because this was reminding me of another film that I saw, where the feeling was, man, I wish I could be a jerk like that. Like, I wish I could just... You know, like it was a movie where you felt that the person that wrote it was just like, man, I wish I could just punch people in the throat and they piss me off. You know, like, it's not the one with Mel Gibson, because that got deeper. What was that called?
Payback?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It's not the movie that I'm thinking of, but Payback was a similar kind of movie.
Yeah.
Kind of an anti-hero. This is
kind of in that vibe. And he's not a total jerk. I don't think it's a spoiler to say this, but there is a scene where he is about to go in and kill somebody, and there's a guy at the door, and the guy is protecting the kid, and he shows up, he sneaks up behind the guy, sticks the gun to the head, and he goes, hi, John. Or not John. This guy's name is like Bill. He's like, hi, Bill. How's the wife? How's the kids? Good? If you take your head, earpiece out, and you go home right now, you don't have to die. And the guy goes, sure thing, John, I owe you one, and walks away. And you're like, well, he's not a total jerk.
He spared one guy.
And then he proceeds to go into the room and kill everybody.
Yeah.
And you're like, are you kidding me?
There are some badass fight scenes in the trailer. It looked pretty fun.
And that's not even half of it. There's fight scenes in the movie that are way longer and are way better.
Yeah. I'm glad that some trailers are leaving something to the imagination these days.
This leaves a bunch. There's literally a scene that it should be comedic. The mob boss at one point, after he hangs up on the phone on his face, the guy that's the Russian, he's like a Russian mob boss. Sends a bunch of guys to the house, and it's literally like 50 guys in ski masks running across John Wick's lawn. And they're all breaking into his house at the same time, and he proceeds to kill them all. I don't think it's a spoiler. He kills everybody. And the action sequence is literally like he does stuff. You're like, wow, people shouldn't operate. Like the world doesn't operate this way. This is crazy.
Yeah. I feel like, There was a movie with Clive Owen and somebody else in it, Locked and Loaded or Fully Loaded.
Shootout,
yeah, and that it was like that. That movie was like they were doing ridiculous things with guns, but it was fun. Like they took the right tone with it. And this I felt even in the trailer, there was a joke at the end about a laundromat, and I was like, okay, like I get the tone they're going for. Like, it's the Schwarzenegger one-liners from the 80s, you know, like he throws a machete through someone's chest and goes, stick around, you know, stuff like that.
Yep, it's very much in that vein, and it's also directed and choreographed by the guy who did V for Vendetta and a bunch of the Matrix movies, I think. That explains where a bunch of the special effects and stunts come
from. Yeah, it had a Matrix sort of vibe to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two people, the guy and his sister that directed the Matrix.
The Wachowskis.
Yeah. They've got a new one out now, don't they? Something about Jupiter? Jupiter Rising?
Yeah, Jupiter Ascending.
Ascending.
Which I think has a, like, Rotten Tomatoes score of, like, 20.
Really?
Yeah, people don't like it. Critics hate it.
That bad?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. It looks good. Like, it looks...
The trailers look like... I saw the trailer in a theater and was like, okay, I might want to see that. And then I saw the reviews and I went, ooh, I might...
Yeah, I mean, I like Mila Kunis. I can't... I mean, she's a good actor. I can't picture her in, like, a heroine role.
No.
But that's just because I've never seen her in one. Like, you wouldn't necessarily picture... someone like Tom Hanks in a movie like that, but he could pull it off. Right?
Right.
But the other guys I've seen in action movies, Sean Bean has been in everything.
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
In everything too.
Yeah. But the thing about Sean Bean in that movie is that he feels typecast. Like he's, and that's kind of, it's probably just his age, you know, they have to put him in like the mentor role.
Yep.
And so that kind of stuff, I wasn't super excited, but it looks very pretty. I mean, just the special effects and the concept. I like the concept of it too. You know, it was different, you know, it's as much as I'm excited for Star Wars 7, you know, and Star Trek 3 and all that kind of stuff. This was something completely new. It was a new IP that I'd never heard of.
It's nice to get a new sci-fi movie.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So for me, I've been watching a lot of Netflix, which involved actually Once Upon a Time. I'm still watching it, which is why I'm talking about it. If it was like something I could put down, then sure, it wouldn't be something that I would be talking about on the show. But I can't stop watching it. I've got lots of complaints. This season, what's that?
I was going to say, I fell off about the end of season two.
Well, the end of season two is the last I really kind of completed it. I remember starting season three and was like, oh, man, like three episodes in and we're still on Neverland. Like, I was done. One of the main reasons was that I really don't like the actor that plays Peter Pan. He's terrible. He's terrible as Peter Pan. Season three is long over, so, I mean, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to get, not crazy spoilers, but I'm going to drop a few bombs here. But the way that they handled Pan was different. They get points for that. Bill Meeks, who's been on the show, is a big fan of Once Upon a Time. Actually, he has a podcast called Greetings from Storybrooke. And for the longest time, I used to call Once Upon a Time Storybrooke. incorrectly. Because of Bill's show, and I tuned in a couple times, but then quickly they got ahead of me, so I stopped listening because I didn't want the spoilers, because they get into quite a lot of detail. And he and I were talking this week, and he had mentioned that he really enjoys season three and their take on Pan as very unique, and they do get points for the uniqueness of how they handle various fairy tale characters like Robin Hood, the Big Bad Wolf, Snow White and Prince Charming, of course. Rapunzel is in an episode I saw recently. The Little Mermaid was in it. Ariel. I mean, the show is on ABC, so they've got license for all kinds of stuff. But the actor that played Peter Pan, the only way that I can describe it, it's very similar to the way that the actor played Ygritte from Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
In that, instead of, like, they're supposed to be angry. They're supposed to be brooding and angry. And all they do is just pout or stick their bottom chin out. Like, it's really...
It's annoying.
Yeah, and it's fake. Like, you're not convincing anybody. And he was an eyebrow talker. Every time that he said an emphasis on a word, he would go from, a scowl that would have the eyebrows very tight and very down across his nose to the top of his forehead. And it would happen repeatedly in every paragraph. And you're just kind of like, how does anybody watch this and not give the guy feedback? Look.
And the other thing, too, is it could be the episode or it could be the direction he's given that they want him to do that, which I hope is not the case.
No, I really hope that is not the case at all. I just don't understand. Like, people are supposed to be evil. Like, he's playing a villain. He's the antagonist the whole time. You don't have to look angry to be scary.
Right.
You know, some of the scariest villains are the people that look like they don't care.
Yeah.
Like, creepy is scary. Angry is what a 4-year-old thinks is scary, right? And this goes on for a while. And they're also on Neverland for like the first part of the whole second season. Like, it feels like the same way that The Flash feels around the mid-season break, where it feels like the season finale. I want to say that halfway through season 3, they get the go-ahead for the other half of season 3.
I don't think they were on the verge of getting canceled, but I believe they got a huge budget increase for season 3.
Well, they're not using it.
They're not using it?
Well, they might be using it on actors, because they're not using it on special effects. It's so bad. The green screens are so bad. There was one scene in a recent episode that I watched where Prince Charming and Snow White are in a castle. It is the summer castle getaway after their marriage. It's a flashback to a honeymoon scene, and it's a real set. And I'm sure it's not real stone, but it's made to look like real stone. And it was refreshing, because I can't tell you how many times I'm looking at actors standing, and there's not even real props in the room with them. Like, the door frame 3 feet away from them is not even real. There's just nothing but a green screen. And you can tell that the actors are not looking into any kind of space. Like, they're looking around, and it's that telltale fake look around move.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm going to talk to you, and then the other person's going to talk back, and we're not in the same room. I'm looking at a, you know, giant metal ball and a stick, and it does not work at all. And I wish they would stop doing it. They used to get away with a lot more stuff in season 1 when they had a tighter budget. They were left to do trickery and camera tricks and smart cuts, and I find that much more effective than, you know, bad CG, which CG is so good in movies these days. Like, you can't do half-assed stuff on TV. If you're going to do it, you got to save it for like really poignant moments.
I also feel like the show is so marketed towards kids.
It does feel very kiddy.
That's why they feel like they can get away with the bad CG, because this is for the kids.
Yeah, well, they beat you over the head with the freaking plot. It is really annoying. Like, every episode, it's the end of the world. Someone is gonna die. Oh my gosh. Two episodes total. The one where they're gonna die and the next one. That plot point is resolved. Everybody's fine. The curse of certain death that they had is now gone in an episode and a half. And then they just repeat that process. And the whole time, everybody is just talking doom and gloom. Oh my gosh, it's the end. Oh no, it's the end. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I get that there has to be this big ominous thing like the curse. And the curse has to be lifted by the Savior. That was the whole first season.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that you drag out over the first season. But I mean, I kid you not, in the third season, they have done this every 2 episodes. And it you lose your audience. There's no weight to anything that you're doing on the show. You know, it becomes a fairy tale procedural, just like a Law and Order procedural. It's like, all right, well, it's halfway through the show. This is where we go to commercial. We come back and we switch from the cops to the lawyers because the cops caught the bad guy. And now we're going to see how long it takes the lawyers to put the guy in jail.
Yeah. No, my wife and I watched the first season and we loved the first season because it was just very different from what we were getting on TV.
It was charming. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second season, it started really strong. There was kind of a lull in the middle where I was kind of like, ugh. It picked up again, and then just towards the end, we were just like, really? That's where they're going with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, it's not to say that there isn't some saving moments, and Phil Rude in the chat room is just asking me, like, I'm trying to figure out why you're watching the show, Joel. I don't know. I really don't. I think there's two things, maybe. I want to like it. You know, I don't hate it, but I don't really love it either.
And I love Robert Carlyle as Rumpelstiltskin.
He got
and
better.
I think they nail his character until about the end of the second season, when he should be becoming a hero and not a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like he starts to make that turn, and then they go, nah, we'd rather have him a villain.
Well, this is the thing. They write themselves into these wonderful arcs, and the character looks like it's developing, and then they seesaw. And I'm like, in the third season, he's a hero for two episodes, and then he does something evil, and then he does something heroic, and then he does something evil. And it's not a long journey. Right. It's like a journey from beginning to end every two episodes. And they had the same problem with Regina. I liked the first season, but I really had a hard time with Regina, because after the first five or six episodes, she was like a broken record. It was just like, right. Get away from my son. Get away from my son. Henry is everything to me. Get away from my son. And she's a good actor. I understand that she's playing the Evil Queen, and Evil Queens in the fairy tale world are myopic. Like, they're just evil. There is nothing else to them. That's what they're supposed to be. I understand that. But to make this show, you kind of have to have characters be more well-rounded. In the second season, they really started to go there. And they rounded her out a little bit. And in the third, they digress back into she's just a bitch all the time. And halfway through the third season, she has a little bit more of a push back to a redemption point. So I feel like they're writing for ratings. Like, they know what people like, but once they give people what they like, they then struggle what to do next. So then they have something happen where the person has a relapse. And dude, if I had a dime for every time in the show that something is reset and that someone loses their memory.
My biggest gripe when I was watching it was that there's so many characters that they start leaving out characters, and you'll be like, wait, where is the Magic Mirror dude? Mm-hmm. Magic Mirror dude was here, like, all of a sudden he was a major plot point, and now he's not here. Oh, that's right. He's on another show now.
Yeah, and the way that they handle this stuff is not always the greatest. I find that I can escape into the show. I do find it interesting how they handle different things. Like, the way that they handled Ariel was neat. The way that I just watched one where they show Lumiere, the character Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
And that is very different from what they did in the cartoon. Obviously, I mean, they can't animate hardly anything in the show. They're not going to try to do a talking candlestick. Not when it was done so well in Beauty and the Beast, right? So they make it like a spirit that appears in the flames over a candelabra, which is, again, very cool. And it worked well. And I found that interesting and entertaining because it was neat and original, and the character had some flaws and that kind of stuff. The biggest issue that I have about the overall plot is that something grand will happen. Like, Emma's memory will be erased and Henry's memory will be erased and everybody else will lose a year of their lives. And now they're struggling to go and find Emma and restore her memory.
Yeah.
If that was the whole, maybe not the whole season, but if that was the better part of a second story arc in the season, it would have a huge payoff at the end, when, say, right. This isn't how it happened. I'm just going to kind of wax poetic here. If Snow and her Prince Charming, David, I think his name is, were the ones at the season finale to finally wake Emma up and everybody reunites as a happy family, that would be really cool. They could find a way to make that pretty, not powerful, but they could have that weight at the end of a finale that you'd need. But instead, they take care of it in a few episodes. So you don't, and you get used to it. Like, you get programmed where you're just like, all right, well, I'm curious to see how this is going to go, but they're going to resolve this in 45 minutes. So, like, let's just see how she goes.
Two more episodes and we'll get a conclusion to this plot
point. Yeah. Yeah. Now, there was some body switching and stuff like that, and that I have no time for. Like, the tropes, I'm glad that they're over. you know, amnesia and body switching and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's so soap opera. Like, it's not, yeah. It doesn't really appeal to me. And I think it's maybe just because I'm spoiled by sci-fi. Like, I mean, you know, I'm talking, one of my favorite movies from 2014, there's a talking fucking raccoon in the whole movie. Like, and I don't have a problem with that. But for this show, I have this high bar that I just can't seem to get past. And I think the problem that they run into, and I'm not saying that this is at all anybody, you know, I'm not blaming the people that are making the show. It must be very challenging to deal with magic at the level that it exists in, like, the fairy tale world, where people can just look or wiggle their nose and anything they want happens if they're magical. Like, it's really hard to put restrictions on that.
Right.
You know, like, it's hard to...
There is no, like, fundamental laws or rules that you as a viewer can follow.
Yeah, like, whatever you do, don't let Pan have that thing in your hand. And Pan just looks at you, blinks, and it's in his hand. What do you do? How do you write suspense when that's the, you know, the way that things are?
And, you know, he does that in one scene, and then in the next scene, he can't do that, and they can't explain why he can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't bother.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are some things about the show that redeem themselves in terms of, like, some of the actors are very good. I really enjoy the dynamic of I can't remember her last name. Is Jennifer is the girl that plays Snow, and then Jennifer Morrison is the girl that plays Emma. The kid that plays Henry, he's grown up quite a bit. His voice has changed now, which is kind of funny, and he at the moment doesn't have a memory of any of this stuff. So he's playing like the cool 14-year-old or the 12-year-old. Like, he's a pretty chill kid. Whereas before, he was the one that had to make everybody believe in fairy princesses and dragons and stuff.
Which got old too.
Yeah, that did get old. I mean, there are some things that are developing that I enjoy. But I think, and this is a theory, and I want to ask you about this because I feel like I've been talking for a while. When I sit down to watch Netflix, when I find something that I like, even just loosely like, I'd rather have something mediocre to watch than have to decide what to watch.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. Right now on my Netflix queue, I have 400 different things on the queue, and I don't want to have to scroll through the whole list, so I'll find something that's marginally okay and be like, all right, I guess I'll stick with this till it's over, and then I'll remove it from the list. And then I can X that off.
Yeah, I feel like, and this happens more with series than it does with movies. Movies, I have this ongoing list of, like, my list on Netflix that I just never get to. Stuff that I'm going to bookmark because it's like, oh, hey, cool, that movie's on Netflix. I'm not in the mood to watch that right now, but I'll watch it some other time, and then I just forget to go. And then I go forget. I always sit down and go, hey, I wonder what's new. And a huge portion of it is, like, I might be bookmarking my favorite films. And a lot of times, if I've got a couple hours, I want to watch something I haven't seen before. So then I go hunting. But when you find a show like, well, I liked the first and second season. I didn't like the start of the third, but it's all here on Netflix. It's all super accessible. I'm already paying my $8 a month. I might as well just click next and see and hope for the best. And there's been some episodes that I've really enjoyed. And there's been some episodes where I'm just like, oh God, is this over now? But again, I love the fact that I'm not spending 20 minutes trying to decide what to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I told you what I've been watching, it's garbage.
What is it?
Spill it. I've been watching reruns of Murder, She Wrote. So.
That's awesome.
They have the entire series on Netflix. So I've just been like, I remember this one as a kid. I'll just watch Angela Lansbury solve murder mysteries for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. That used to be on Sunday nights when I was a kid.
Yep.
That's great. So have you seen anything else? I mean, you mentioned a lot of movies. I know that we talked about the Keanu Reeves and a bunch of other ones are all the same.
And they were all good. They were all great. All three of them were great.
Nice.
They're all very similar, but they were all great. Like, it was a great rental night, all three movies. But I also went to the movies. And I saw Paddington.
Wait a minute. You went outside?
Yes, I went outside. I braved the weather and I went to the movie theater.
Damn it, Lou.
Yeah, I know. And I got to tell you, I've never been so happy walking out of a movie theater.
Really?
In like a long time. It's obviously a kids movie,
mm-hmm.
but they do not dumb it down for you. They do not dumb it down for the kids. They do not. It is very smart in the way it handles everything. I don't know if you're familiar with the books at all.
Maybe not the books, but I mean, they were probably read to me at one point when I was very, very little, but I do recall some animation.
Yep. They did do a short-lived, I think, Reading Rainbow, I think, did a couple of segments on it where they did like an animated version of Paddington.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some things they changed drastically from the book. It begins with an opening sequence that you don't see coming. In the books, Paddington is just he's in a train station and a family finds him and takes him home kind of thing.
Right.
And in the movie, they explain where he came from and how he got to the train station.
Hmm.
And they explain why he can speak and other bears can't.
Interesting.
He's a rare species of bear. That comes from darkest Peru.
Nice.
And an adventurer finds his aunt and uncle and realizes that they can speak and teaches them how to speak better in English. And he is like their nephew that they ended up adopting. And an earthquake destroys their home. And his aunt is going to go to the nursing home for bears. And she sends him to London because the adventurer told them, if you or your family are ever in London, look me up. And they said, and with him not having a home, she goes, we'll send you to London. I'm sure that the adventurer will help you find a home. And he gets to London and it's nothing that they were told London is.
Right.
And he spends an entire day in a train station trying to find somebody that will help him find a home. And eventually, you know, the father from Downton Abbey and his family show up and take Paddington home. Begrudgingly.
Yeah, it seemed like a well-oiled machine in terms of something new, maybe a little bit something borrowed from like the character. Like the dad is obviously like rough around the edges and very prim and proper at start, and then eventually he grows to love Paddington. You can kind of see where it goes, like
you can
where it's
see
heading.
Where it's, it, you can see where it's going, but its jokes are very clever.
Mm.
The jokes are very clever. It's really well animated. You forget he's a CG bear.
Oh, that's cool.
He's very much in the veins of the talking raccoon.
Right.
And I want to say it's probably the same technology because he looks just as good.
Yeah, and I find that it's not that they're making fur or eyes or anything, you know, look like it's part of the scene so much, is that with the amount of minute control that they can give the animators, along with whatever facial motion capture that they can achieve with the actor that was perhaps voicing Paddington, the animated character just communicates emotion and subtle emotion to the
right.
audience so much better that it becomes so much more believable that you don't even remember what's going on. You just, all of a sudden you feel bad for him or happy for him, or you're excited with him, and you just
right.
immediately forget that you're watching a CG character. It was like, when that was for me when I was watching Rocket Raccoon. For the first minute, I was like, wow, that looks amazing. And after that, I was just more interested in about where he came from and why he was
he's just a character now.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
And this does that very well, right down to the same idea. There's entire scenes where there is no real people. It is him in the house by himself at one point. And it's like maybe a 10-minute sequence of him in the house by himself.
Wow.
Like stumbling over things. And you just forget that he's a CG bear.
That's amazing.
And you're like, and they do such a well, you know where it's going. They don't want, everybody wants him in the house, but the father doesn't want him. Or the kids don't like him at first either. It's just the mother that wants him there because she feels bad for him.
Hmm.
And it's like each one of the kids warms up to him one by one. And one of my favorites is the neighbor across the street is played by the new Doctor Who. I'm trying to think of his name. And I had no idea he was in it. And he like shows up and he's like, is that a bear going in your house? And I was like, it's Doctor Who. And he's totally not Doctor Who in this. He's a total jerk and he's not nice to anybody. And then by the end of the movie, even he's like, hi, Paddington. And you're like, see, even they everybody makes the change.
Interesting.
It's just, it's well written. It's very funny. And I was totally expecting it to be like a kid's movie that like I didn't identify with.
Mm-hmm.
But their jokes are so clever. They're taking him. They're trying to find out where the explorer is so that maybe they can find him a home. And they have to ride the subway. And he gets lost in the subway and he sees a sign on the escalator and it shows a dog. And it shows that you have to hold the dog if you're riding the escalator. So he thinks you can't ride the escalator without a dog. So he goes and he steals somebody's dog so that he can ride the escalator. And you're like, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, that's really cute.
And they do a bunch of stuff like that.
That's great. Is Peter Capaldi the doctor?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thanks again to Phil in the chat room for looking that up. See, now this is the great thing about having a chat room is that we have a hive mind. That we can have stuff looked up for us while we're chatting. I remember watching the trailer for Paddington. I'll have to recommend this to Peyton.
It'd be perfect.
Because Peyton is, I know that he's struggling. Like, I really wanted to recommend that he take Ewan, who's now 5, to go see Big Hero 6. It's too old for even 5-year-olds. You know, there's not a lot of, like, really good kids' movies that you can go to the theaters for. Ewan went to go see, it wasn't Cars, it was Planes 2 maybe. And again, he got scared because of there was a big fire scene.
So the villain in the movie is a woman who's a taxidermist.
Wow. Okay.
And she wants to taxiderm Paddington.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is not terrible though. I mean, like the Big Hero 6 dealt with death. Like it was one of the main motivations for the characters in the movie. And that is very real.
Yeah.
You know, a cartoony portrayal of a taxidermist is no more, you know, it's not scarring to a child. Cruella de Vil wants to make a coat out of puppies.
That is pretty much what this is.
Yeah. I mean, like, no, I'm fine. I turned out all right.
Yeah.
Paddington sounds great.
I walked out of the theater, and I'm not a big kids movie guy. I saw my fair share of them as a kid, and I can usually tell the plot. I can usually see where it's going. There's usually one, maybe two jokes that I laugh the whole movie, and then I'm like, okay, it served its purpose. And this was like, I smiled or I laughed the entire movie.
That's great.
And not in a silly joke kind of thing. Just like everything in it is heart wrenching to the point where you're like, oh, that's so adorable. I can't help but smile at it.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm just looking up the director, Paul King, and he seems fairly new. I mean, he's been directing for, you know, 10 years, but it's nothing major that I recognize.
And the other thing they do is they tie it up in a nice little bow where they could do more if they wanted to, but they don't have to.
Nice. I kind of hope they just don't. Because it's usually the sequels that then sours everybody, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad that it's a good movie. It's nice when they can make children's movies that parents can go to and really enjoy.
I have no kids and I went to it and loved it. So that says something.
Nice. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute. This is sponsored by tweakedaudio.com. You can visit tweakedaudio.com for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Enter the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code, of course, is TCC. I've got a pick this week that I thought was actually really cool. I don't remember who sent it on Facebook. It was just something that floated by, pardon the pun. But it was essentially a free diver, who I'm going to butcher his name. It is, as I looked this up really quickly, my doc froze. That's fun. It's a French guy.
His name is Goulamy Neri.
Thank you. I had that all prepped, and then my doc just stopped scrolling for me. Thank you, Google. Much appreciated. And he's free diving in an ocean current. It's really hard to explain. But if you're in the ocean, if you're not swimming, you kind of sink. You know, like there's a moment where you can kind of float and kind of feel like you're free floating, but eventually you sink to the bottom or you have to swim up. And he's underwater riding this invisible current that you can't see, doing some really interesting, it's not really ballet, but he's just doing some, you know, acrobatic moves and stuff like that. And it's really neat. It's put to some very cool kind of techno music. It is the second attempt from filmmaker Julie Gauthier, and it's up for some awards as a short film. And it's great to watch. It's 3 minutes and 40 seconds. And
it is 3 minutes, 40 seconds where you'll just be like, how, why? And that's really cool.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for a couple of moments when there's clearly some sunlight hitting him, I was looking at it going, how deep is he? And how is he, like, he's holding, I understand that there's some cuts, but like, he's holding his breath for a really long time. I mean, I'm assuming as a free diver, it's probably something he's quite good at.
Right.
But still, like, you know, it doesn't look like he's anywhere, like the shots are really wide. It doesn't look like he's anywhere near an air tank.
No.
You know?
It doesn't look like he's anywhere near an air tank. And isn't it after 4 minutes, you suffer brain damage? So he can't be whole. It has to be like 3 minutes of him just in constant film.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's not, there's cuts. Like the whole thing is only 3.5 minutes long, and he's not, it's not one shot. He's got several different moments, and there's some lighting changes and stuff like that. So obviously probably some location changes and whatever, but yeah, it's magical. Like I can't describe it in any other way. I mean, they explain the science of it in the article, but it's very, very cool. So we'll have the link to the Vimeo video in the show notes for this. What about you, Lou? Anything that you'd like to share?
I have two quick ones. There is a video game, a culty video game series I'm a huge fan of called the Persona games. They're very Japanese role-playing games. They're all anime, basically, based, and they're very cleverly written. If you're into Japanese culture at all, they're really fascinating. And the new one just came out, and the trailer is really cool. It looks like an old-school, like, anime, but with, like, burglary and robbery and fighting, and it looks really neat.
Yeah, now I watched this, and at first I thought, wow, this is really well animated, but then it switched to like a CG cell shaded thing. So
that's in game.
That's how it plays.
That's how it plays.
So that's how the whole series looks.
Yeah, the last three, because the series has been around since the mid 90s.
Mm.
So it was in like the 16-bit era, and they did their best to kind of make it look like this. They've all had that same art style.
You know what? When I was watching this, I thought it was a TV show.
The games all feel like a TV show to the point where one of the series, one of the games was actually turned into an anime at one point. And they're really interesting. If you can suspend your disbelief, the entire fourth game is, Persona 4 is a murder mystery. The premise of the game is that urban myth is that if you see yourself on TV, you're going to die. And this kid moves to this small town in like the middle of nowhere, Japan. And one night his TV turns on and he sees one of his classmates on the TV in like wandering around in a maze, lost, and finds out the next day that classmate died. And him and a bunch of his friends get together and they try to figure out who's putting people inside the TV, and there's like a world inside the TV that they are like fighting to battle monsters to save people from their inner demons. It's really weird, but it's really well written, and the game is paced very differently. You are a student in high school, and so during the day, the game is broken up into days of the week and months. And so it's you have a morning segment, an afternoon segment, and an evening segment, and you decide what your character does for those segments, where you might go and hang out with a friend, which will give you a stat bonus next time he helps you in the adventure.
Hmm.
Or you go to class and you know the answer to the question the teacher asks, so you get a knowledge boost, which will help you solve something else later on in the game. And so it's like an interactive story.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, they're really long. like 70 hours a game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's but like a part-time job.
Yeah. So they're really great games. Watch this trailer. If that sounded interesting to you, this is going to be on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4.
Hmm, right on.
And there is a petition to get it to computer as well. There's an internet petition for it already.
Right on.
And my second quick one is if you like anime, Funimation, who owns the rights to like Dragon Ball Z, Full Metal Alchemist, you name an anime, chances are they've probably got rights to it somewhere or have done the translation to English. They now offer a streaming service, and it's like $8 a month, and it gives you access to about 80% of their library. It's like an endless supply of anime. And I'm really picky about my anime, but when I find one and it's got like 200 episodes, I'm like, okay, I'm in. So if you like anime, check out Funimation. And their service does stream to PC and console.
Cool. Very, very cool. I recognize the Funimation name. I don't watch a lot of anime, but I've seen a couple episodes and stuff.
They own the rights to just about everything.
Yeah.
It's like 80% of the stuff that's out there, they own the rights to. And their streaming service, they actually stream stuff that literally, like, it airs in Japan last week. They translate it and subtitle it, and you can actually get it subtitled, like, a week later.
Wow. For those anime fans out there, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. There's another service that does the same thing called Crunchyroll, and I tried that a year or so ago, and it was subpar video quality. The selection was not stuff I was interested in. It was very girly stuff.
Yeah, I've got that app on the Apple TV, but I think I hit it because I just didn't. I tried to get into it and realized that, you know, I'm not a big anime fan and it was a paid service. It's like, nah, it's probably not just not
this
for me.
If you go to their website, you can also stream a bunch of the episodes with commercials.
Mm.
But they don't offer it on console unless you pay for it. And I thought at $8 a month, it wasn't that bad. I'd try it for a month. And I was like, well, I'll at least keep it till I finish the series I'm watching. So
yeah, I have such a hard time finding an anime that I enjoy. I enjoy the animation. Like, I find it very cool. It's very well done. I watched a take on the Justice League, I think, or X-Men. It was an X-Men twist. It was an anime X-Men twist. I remember talking about it on the show, actually. And it was good. Like, there was some issues, but it was, you know, it was kind of Japanese culture and anime kind of all mixed in with how they view the West. And it was good. It was just different. Like, it wasn't what I was used to. And I haven't really been able to find anything since that I've enjoyed, because I get into them and then they just get weird or really sexual. And I'm just like, nope, not what I want in my animation. I tried to watch, I used to read Witchblade, comic when I was younger. It was one of the Image comics that I really liked, just because the art, Silvestri was just knocking it out of the park. And it was a creepy, cool comic with a pretty strong female lead. And they had something sort of similar in the anime, but wow. Like, there was, like, crotch shots, and, like, it was the camera. It was a 14-year-old's wet dream is what this basically cartoon was. Yeah, that's, it was not at all appropriate. Like, it's something, and I think, this is where, like, North America's idea of animated entertainment smashes into, you know, Japanese ideas of animated entertainment, how it like really does, and quite it's quite accepted that it spans all age groups, topics, you know, all that kind of stuff. For me, though, to look at something animated and have it be that kind of sexually overt makes me very uncomfortable.
I can totally understand. I have seen some anime that I'm like, okay, I kind of like this, but I would not watch this with my mother.
Yeah, no, I was like, I was watching Witchblade. I'm kind of going, all right, well, I mean, they've drawn her with big boobs. That happens a lot in anime. Like, I can deal with that. That's fine. And then, yeah, okay, her clothes kind of got ripped a lot. It's like, wow, okay, camel toe, I'm out.
Yep.
Can't handle it. I'm done. Yep. I'm done. Yeah, it says be careful on Netflix, kiddies.
I'm very picky. It has to have a really good story for me to stick with it. Rarely do I find a series that like goes on forever and I stick with it. I like stuff that gets 2-3 seasons tied up in a nice bow. I get a nice summary at the end and I move on.
Yeah, I've had some recommendations from fans that are into anime that they grew up with, but they're kind of biased on the whole nostalgia kick.
Yep.
So, and I missed the boat. Like, I'm just a little bit older. Like, I'm 5 years older than some of these people. And I wasn't a Pokemon fan. Fullmetal Alchemist was just not my thing. Like, it just wasn't part of my animation childhood. So it just does not resonate with me now.
I understand completely. I don't recommend anime on this show for a reason. I don't want to. Yeah, I know it's not your thing. But this service I came across and it was really cheap. And I was like, well, it might be something people might be interested
in. Oh, so. And I'm not saying there isn't good anime out there. My problem is that there's so much anime out there.
That's the problem.
I don't have the education to then go watch and find something that I want. I have to invest, you know, like maybe between a half an hour to three, you know, to 90 minutes watching a handful of episodes to decide if I would like something or not. And there's no one around to say, oh yeah, that's a good series. The first couple episodes are kind of slow, but oh my gosh, does it ever get good? It's like, Avatar, the Last Airbender.
Yep.
The first few episodes they're fun. I mean, like they're not bad, but does that series ever get good? Like you got to stick with it. It's kind of kiddie at first, but it really grows on you. And there's no one around to say like, oh yeah, you have to stick with that. I can't remember what it was. There was something about giants eating people, and I tried to watch some of that one, and that did not at all sit.
Oh, you watched
Titans? Something Titans.
Yeah, Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan. I hear it's good. I hear lots of people that are animators and friends of mine, and just really respect the thing. I watched two or three of them. And I was like, nope. Not at all. It makes me feel kind of dumb. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
It's not for everybody, man.
No, and it's funny. It's just like, it's when you have a lot of people that are artists and peers and people that are into entertainment and whose opinion you respect, and they love the series, and you're just kind of like, I don't understand. Why don't I like this?
I will make a recommendation to you on an anime that I think you will appreciate it, if nothing but for the writing. Check out a series called Eden of the East.
I think I've seen this on Netflix.
It's very, it was on Netflix here in the United States, but it's been pulled. But you guys might still have it in Japan.
Is it kind of like steampunky?
No, it is very like techie, like technology driven anime kind of thing. This kid has amnesia and finds out that he has a phone in his pocket that will let him do anything.
Okay, so we've already talked about amnesia on the show, Lou. You're barking up the wrong tree.
I know. But you know, he's been given a phone by a rich person who is trying to sabotage the Japanese government. And he has $1 billion to straighten out the Japanese government or he dies. And there's a bunch of other ones. There's a bunch of other people like him, and they're all trying to kill each other to save the Japanese government or something. It sounds crazy. One episode, and you'll be like, huh, I kind of see where they're going with this. I might give it a second episode.
Okay.
I've watched the whole series. It's really good and has a really good ending. Well, it ends. It's over. 12 episodes. You're done.
Nice. I do find myself in the mood for animation sometimes, and I've run out. Like, I've watched the last, most recent DC animated feature last week, and just, you know, was disappointed. So, like, I've got nothing.
And I'll tell you, I don't think it's, if I remember, it's been a while since I've seen it, but it's not really overly sexual. If at all. I think there is a character. They joke his nickname is Panties because he got stranded without his pants ripped on him and he had to wear a pair of panties home. So that's his nickname. It's a joke.
but that's clever, though. And it, I mean, it's not like I'm afraid of, you know, sexuality in anime. If it's handled maturely.
But other than that, I don't think anything in it is done in that direction. I'd say it's almost family friendly. I want to say there's one episode that might not be family friendly, but it's really well written. It's really creative. It's very sci-fi plot, but tied to like a real world kind of feel.
Hmm.
And they make a lot of references to like Google and stuff in the show. It's kind of weird.
Interesting. So, would you say like PG-13?
I'd say about PG-13.
Okay, cool. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. Go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite device. For the Citadel Cafe, choose channel 1 at showtime. Todd has been working round the clock over at Alpha Geek and has just launched 2 new video channels. So if you've got a podcast that has a video component that they do live, you can now check that out live on alphageekradio.com, as well as a 24-hour rerun feed. Same with the audio. So when there's not a live show going on, you can tune in anyway and just catch some of your favorite shows that you may have missed. You can check out the music for the show as composed by Kevin MacLeod. There's a link at the bottom of our show notes every week. The episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Please check out my Patreon page. That's where you can support this podcast as well as my comic work. And while you're at it, follow me on Instagram. I had a lot of fun on Instagram today. I was at the Dalhousie Student Union Market selling books and prints and taking snaps of some of the art that I was doing and sketches that I was doing in the books and sending them out to people. And people on Instagram seemed to like it. So just my name, Joel Duggan, on Instagram. Seems like a fun way to find out some more about my artwork. Lou, where can people find you online?
Easiest way to find me is at Busy Zombie Lord on Twitter. I also do Zombies Ate My Podcast. You can find that on iTunes. And soon you will be able to hear me on Off the Cuff. Should be going up live. Might actually be going live as we're speaking right now. So
nice.
So I know that behind the scenes, while this has been going on, Ryan has been working on putting our show up, our first episode up for us.
Oh, awesome. You got Ryan doing the behind the scenes?
He's helping us with the first few episodes because he helped us set up the site.
Yeah. Good guy like that.
Yes, he is. And more coming. I might have a new writing gig. So,
You haven't been doing that in a while. That's great.
It's been about a year. So I might have a new writing gig. And next time I'm on the show, I might have a convention to talk about.
You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Also, I will avoid weather this week.
We can do it right now in the pre-show. We can just get it out of our system.
I get it out of my system. We've had probably what is the equivalent in my area. I'm trying to do the math. We've had 80 inches of snow, which I think accumulates to like 170 centimeters of snow or something like that.
I'm 180 something centimeters tall.
The snowbank in front of my house is almost 10 feet.
That's insane.
This is stuff from last week.
Oh, wow. Well, last week. Yeah. Yeah. No, we had a lot of snow here. We do have a lot of snow here too. Yeah. So for those people that are into the inside baseball of the Citadel Cafe, this is now the sixth week in a row. Granted, this isn't the show official that we've talked about weather.
You're familiar with Groundhog's Day?
Yes.
The state of New Hampshire issued a fake arrest warrant for Punxsutawney Phil today.
That's great.